This will be Manning. Back to throw. Across the middle. Pass complete. Ball down at the 35, to the 40, to the 45, to the 50, to the 45, to the 40, to the 35, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. What did he do? All he did was score. Joey Kent. Touchdown on play number one.
You're listening to the RTI Podcast, powered by RockyTopInsider.com.
Welcome into the Rocky Top Insider Podcast. I am Ben McKee, joined as always by Brad Matthews. Not a fun Monday evening podcast to have, as Tennessee is coming off of a 34-7 loss to Kentucky. Over the weekend, Tennessee has now lost two consecutive games after beginning the season 2-0, and they are now 2-2 and facing number two Alabama. The Crimson Tide come to town this weekend. But Brad, we're going to ignore the fact that Tennessee plays Alabama this weekend. We are not even going to think about it. We are not going to talk about it. Well, we are going to mention it briefly later in the pod, but we're not going to refer to Alabama. We're just going to completely ignore it until our Thursday, Friday pod that we put out, and we'll talk about the game then. But there's plenty to talk about on this podcast, and we will get to those things. Obviously, we will react to Tennessee, Kentucky. Tennessee has also made a change on the coaching staff. Jeremy Pruitt had plenty of comments during his Monday presser regarding that coaching change, who will take over the quarterback position, and a bunch of other topics. But first, we'll talk Tennessee, Kentucky. And before we do that, I'm going to ask you, how are you doing?
Hey, man, I could be doing better, considering the game and the outcome and just sports in general this weekend. You know, I'm a diehard Braves fan, so obviously not the way we wanted to finish our season, blowing our lead against the Dodgers there in the NLCS. But hey, another day, you know, another week, and we've got SEC football, so it can be worse.
That is for sure. Thankfully, my Steelers were able to beat the Browns over the weekend. Your Ravens were able to beat the Eagles, so that was a little saving grace. And I still am not over my postseason baseball pain. Your hopes and dreams lasted longer than mine with the Braves, but my Yankees, this time a week and a half ago, about 9-10 days ago, we're going through the same thing. So I understand with what you're going through, my friend. Tennessee,
I'm pretty
did not,
torn up about it. Not gonna lie.
I completely understand. It's not every year you get a legitimate shot at winning a World Series. So
thank you.
it makes it hurt even worse because we've seen teams come close like the Braves did this year, and not come that close again. The Yankees are still trying to get to a game seven away from the World Series. So this is not a Braves podcast, but I know a ton of Vol fans out there, and a bunch who are listening to this are Brave Vol fans. So we feel your pain. We truly do. But Brad, 34-7 loss to Kentucky. Your thoughts?
Embarrassing, unfortunate, and not necessarily as bad as what the scoreboard shows, but yet again, it was. I mean, where do you want to start, Ben? I mean, we could start picking this thing apart from every which angle, but I mean, obviously the start and
we'll start
overflow.
With the quarterback. Quarterback. I mean, that's a pretty obvious, mm-hmm. The biggest takeaway.
I mean, we start the season just protecting the ball at such a great level. You know, no turnovers and making smart plays, no, you know, out of character plays, just hitting the checkdowns when you're supposed to, making the right protection calls at the line, and actually protecting the quarterback if you're the offensive line and the running backs and pass pro. But these last six quarters for Tennessee, you know, the second half against Georgia, which is far and away against a superior level of talent, especially when you consider Kentucky. And then in really all four quarters against Kentucky, we can't protect the football. And you can see what this team does when they protect the football. But the way we're the way these turnovers are being created is just incredibly disheartening. I mean, how delayed the out route pass and pick six was from JG to, I think, Tillman. That and just incredibly delayed. As a fifth-year quarterback, I don't care if you've started 2 years, 3 years, 1 year, you have to be aware. You have to know, A, I can make this throw. I have the arm strength to make this throw. Or B, I have to put this where my receiver can make a play only. Or C, I know my receiver is not going to go up there and make a fight for this football. And it's a long throw across the hash. I don't think I can make it, so I'm going to work through my progressions. He's got to make a better decision, because not only was he so delayed, it's like he telegraphed it the entire way. That's where he was going, and he's just got to make a better call than that. I mean, the other throw, I understand that, you know, over the middle, you want to take some chances, and Tennessee hasn't taken many at all this year. But that one's into triple coverage, and at least triple coverage. There was a fourth guy in the screen. Where are you going with that football? Hit the check down. And if some people are saying he tried to hit the check down and just airmailed it, baloney. There's no shot.
No,
he was trying to fit that in a window that was not
trying
there.
Trying to do too much.
And then the fumble, I know a lot of people are just at this point with the JG fatigue, they want to point the finger at him because that's the easiest, that's the low-hanging fruit, and that's the simpleton point of view. That one's not necessarily on him, but it shouldn't be taking place. You've got two veteran players that have been playing together in Ty Chandler and Jarrett Garantano. You can't have that play take place. And to have them back-to-back-to-back against a team like Kentucky, your defense is still keeping you in the game, even though you're putting him in terrible positions, just like you did in the second half against Georgia, and yet nothing comes of it. And then ultimately you see this team, at least from my point of view, see no progression with the quarterback, saying regardless of what we do on defense, they've already scored 17 points off of turnovers. What do we have to do defensively? We have to score all the points too. So I think we saw a little bit of effort, a lack thereof, you know, a little bit of quitting on their quarterback, quitting on this offense. And you hate to say that, but we saw glimpses of it, and it's disheartening, especially this early in the season with so much excitement leading into this year. Even coming after the Georgia game, Ben, there were still some positives to take away, and there was still some upside looking forward into the schedule as we get into the meat of the schedule. And now a lot of people are just looking around, you know, those awkward GIFs. You search awkward or uncomfortable in the GIF section on your phone, and you get those eyes just rolling around. Everybody's just awkward as a Vol fan right now, because you know you're the butt of the joke. At the water cooler talk, everybody's just making fun of you because your team right now is embarrassing themselves. When you were supposed to be coming in, hey, we could win 7-8 games this year in this 10-game schedule.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you said. It's just really unfortunate, because I do believe Tennessee is a better football team than Kentucky. Tennessee just has a major issue at the quarterback position. And I realize that does technically take away from a football team. How good are you if your quarterback situation is terrible? But what I mean by Tennessee being better than Kentucky is that in the first half, aside from the four turnovers, outside of those four plays, because it was truly those four plays that Kentucky looked like the better football team. And even on those four turnovers, Kentucky didn't do anything special. Tennessee gift wrapped the football to Kentucky. The Ty Chandler fumble was 1,000% on Ty Chandler not knowing what the play is and running into the quarterback. And as a senior, even as a freshman, you should not be doing that. And then you look at JG's first interception. And that is the one where Kelvin Joseph, the Kentucky corner. He did make a great play on the ball, but JG was late getting the ball to Cedric Tillman on the sideline, and it got picked. I mean, it's a good play, but it's also an easy play to make. JG threw it right to him because he was late. And then the second JG interception, the second pick six, as you said, there was triple coverage and even a fourth guy in the screen. He didn't airmail the check down. He tried to do too much. He tried to force a throw where there wasn't a throw, and he threw it right to a Kentucky linebacker. You and I could have made that catch. I don't know if we would have returned it for a touchdown. I think I would have. I think you would have got hawked down about the 30 or 40 yard line. I would have returned the deep.
Not by defense, JG.
By the defensive, by the center. One of the offensive linemen would have hawked you down. but I mean, Kentucky probably didn't do anything special in that play. JG threw it right to him. And then on the next drive, JT Shroud gets an opportunity. And he does the same thing JG just did, giving the ball right to Kentucky. Kentucky didn't make a special play. JT Shroud threw it into triple coverage. So outside of those four plays that I just talked about, Tennessee was absolutely the better team in the first half. I have no doubt in my mind. Offensively, the offensive line was opening up holes for Eric Gray and Ty Chandler. They were giving Jarrett Garantano time to get rid of the football. Now, I do have to add a play to my negative plays because Darnell Wright did give up a sack on the very first drive on third down that pushed Tennessee out of field goal territory. So there was that one gaffe by the offensive line. But for the most part, in that first half, there were only a couple of negative plays. And Tennessee was moving the football on Kentucky and then shooting itself in the foot, giving the football right back to them. And then you look at it defensively, Kentucky was not running the football on Tennessee in that first half. They weren't. Tennessee was playing good defense. Henry To'oTo'o, Kavaris Crouch were making stops in the backfield. You saw the defensive line getting a good push. Now, the second half wasn't all that great. And you talked about this, and I truly chalked that up to being demoralized because of the offense and being demoralized because of the quarterback position. So that's where my frustration with this football game is at, because the final score says 34-7. That's not a true indicator of where Kentucky's football program is compared to Tennessee's football program. And again, I realize that if you have a terrible quarterback situation, it takes away from how good your team is overall. But outside of that terrible quarterback situation, I think Tennessee actually has a good football team, but the quarterback position continues to hold this program back.
Was it 92, 95 total yards for Kentucky in the first half? So, yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, it was something around there. It was under 100. And that is impressive, especially with all the situation that Tennessee's defenses were put in. But I wanted to get your thoughts on not only the timing of JT Shroud being put into the game, but the length that he was left in the football game.
Absolutely agree with putting him into the game. You can't not leave. You can't not pull JG after the two boneheaded throws that he just made. The second one was worse than the first one, because the first one wasn't a bad decision. It was just a lack of ability. I mean, that was what the play was designed to do. He threw it to the right person. He was just way too late on it and allowed Kelvin Joseph to jump on the football. The second interception, to where he just threw it into triple coverage after he had just driven Tennessee down the field. He and Eric Gray had just driven Tennessee down the field. He hit Brandon Johnson for a nice 25-yard gain over the middle of the field. He then hit Eric Gray on a check down for 10 yards. I think he then hit Eric Gray on another check down for 9 yards, and then Eric Gray comes back and rushes for 8 yards, and then he tries to throw it into triple coverage when Tennessee was in the red zone or within the 30 or so, somewhere there. They were on the verge of scoring. They were knocking on the doorstep of scoring for sure, and he just tries to do too much, forces the football, and that's just a terrible decision. I mean, that's a decision that you don't see high school quarterbacks make. Middle school quarterbacks don't throw it into triple coverage like that. High school quarterbacks at least check it down in most instances. So after that decision, when the drive prior, he was late getting the ball out of his hands, you can't leave him in there, especially after the second half that he had against Georgia. And now the second half against Georgia had more to do with his surroundings on top of decision-making. Kentucky was more solely him. But I was absolutely on board with putting JT Shroud in. The length for JT Shroud, It sucks because you have to go back to Jarrett Garantano, but I don't know how you leave a guy in there who's already a backup that goes in there and does the same thing as JG, throws it right into triple coverage. And the difference between the two is, for whatever reason, Jarrett Garantano doesn't do this in practice. He does not turn the football over in practice, which is why he continues to play. JT Shrout does not play because he does what he did in the game in practice. He turns it over in practice. So I don't know what you do at that point in terms of after Shrout throwing the interception. I think you're just simply stuck between a rock and a hard place. Brian Maurer, I think the reason he did not go in, yes, he has some maturity issues, but I think more so he's really been hampered by that hamstring issue and is still trying to recover from that. So I don't know that he was truly an option. Do you throw Harrison Bailey in there at that point? That's the only option. And I know fans would say, yes. The coaching staff as a whole, people behind the scenes in unison, do not believe Harrison Bailey is ready to play.
And he's not, Ben. And he's not. And I'll touch on Harrison Bailey in just a moment. But referring back to my question on the length of JT Shrout coming into the game, how much of a message did that send to JG, if at all? I mean, the guy got three plays, and here he comes. They're rolling him back out there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how much of a he doesn't feel any pressure at all. And that's not his fault. I mean, you got to look at the coaching staff. You got to look at Winkie. You got to look at Pruitt. You got to look at Chaney. You got to look at T. Martin. You got to look at all of them because they're all involved because the quarterback position drives the offense. So every offensive coach is involved in that decision. And you just would think at this point in time, 3 years in, you got to be having some type of development with the guys that you're bringing in. And touching on Harrison Bailey.
Real quick before you touch on Harrison Bailey, I just one real quick thought before you dive into Bailey. That, what you just brought up in terms of looking at the coaching staff, I don't blame them for the decision to put JT Shrout or to trot JG back out there after the Shrout interception. I don't blame them for making that decision because based off the circumstances, it makes sense. Agreed. What I blame them for is the fact that they have to that they have to put JG back in the game. That's where I blame them. They absolutely should have added a graduate transfer quarterback over the offseason.
I mean, and we go back to Harrison Bailey. Guys, this is not any type of knock. This is nothing against the kid. I think he's actually going to be very good at the University of Tennessee if he gets a fair shot and if he gets in tune with Jim Chaney's system. But in against twos and threes in the fourth quarter against Kentucky, you could visibly see the guys. I mean, he was shaking on the field. He was shaking on the screen. And yeah, he made a couple nice throws, made a couple bad throws, but he's just not ready. And that's understandable. Not only is he a true freshman, but he's a true freshman that hasn't had a normal offseason. And as much as we hear that and as much as fans are tired of hearing it, it's true, and it does make a huge impact on certain positions at this level. Some of them, not as much. But the quarterback position, offensive line, defensive line, it makes a huge, huge impact.
Yeah, and I realize that this is the common theme, saying that Harrison Bailey is not ready. This is the common theme now and kind of even leading into the season. But I was told even before signing day, before he enrolled early, that the expectation was that they did not believe that he was going to be ready to play early. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not an agenda that's being thrown out there to try and, you know, continue to play JG. They like Harrison Bailey's upside, but all along, they have never really believed that he was going to be ready to play as a true freshman. That's just the reality of the situation. Even if JG was balling out right now, or JT Shrout or Brian Maurer, they still would not believe that Harrison Bailey would be ready to play. So they thought that pre-COVID that he wasn't going to be ready to play. Then you add on the fact that he did not have spring practice. He did not have a traditional summer. He was in quarantine nearly all of fall camp. I mean, you add those factors on top of the coaching staff not expecting him to have an impact as a true freshman, it's just not a good combination. So that's why you've seen the hesitancy from the coaching staff to throw Harrison Bailey into the football game, especially now. I mean, you know he's not ready to play. Are you going to throw him in this weekend on Saturday? Again, we're not mentioning the team that Tennessee is playing this weekend until Friday. We are not going to acknowledge Tennessee's next football game. For all we know, they play a football game against somebody random. We'll find out on Friday. They have a bye week after that, and then they head to Arkansas. But I don't know that you throw Harrison Bailey in there just yet. But to put a bow on the game, and then we'll get to some of Pruitt's. We'll get to the coaching change real quick. The quarterback play simply destroyed Tennessee's chances of winning that football game, despite Tennessee being the better team in the first half. I absolutely believe that. And then you saw in the second half, Tennessee's offense comes out and immediately goes three and out. And then Tennessee's defense gives up a touchdown. At that point, I believe that the Tennessee defense is completely demoralized. It's hard to be energetic when you look on the field while you're on the sideline resting and you see what's going on. So just a really unfortunate situation for Tennessee. And I don't blame Pruitt for – I'll say this again. I said it a moment ago. I don't blame Pruitt for the current decisions on who is playing quarterback. I blame Pruitt and this coaching staff for the fact that they have to make these decisions to continue to stick with JG.
Yeah, I agree. There's got to be some type of development. And at some point, even if you like him, even if you like the prospect or the idea of what he could bring in recruiting, you're going to have to make a change at the quarterback position coach.
For sure. And speaking of changes, nice segue, Bradley. Tennessee did make a change along the defensive line, surprisingly, Sunday night, just before midnight. Jeremy Pruitt. Oh, yeah. Well, I should start with
Timely news Price. Dump there.
Yeah. Austin Price of VolQuest reported just before midnight on Sunday that Jimmy Brumbaugh had been let go as defensive line coach, and Pruitt confirmed the report on Monday during his press conference, saying that yesterday I decided to make a change at the defensive line position. Coach Brumbaugh done a really nice job. He worked his tail off. Sometimes from a philosophical standpoint, things are just not a fit and it just didn't work out for us. So I decided to do that, and I'm going to coach the defensive line for the rest of the season. He was also asked again about why he decided to make the move with Jimmy Brumbaugh at this point and what changed from the time he was hired. Because remember, Jimmy Brumbaugh was in his first year as Tennessee's defensive line coach, only coached through four games. Pruitt said, if it's not working out, it's better just to do it right now. Me and Jimmy had a really good conversation. Unfortunately, probably because of the COVID circumstances, when you're a new coach and you don't have a chance to be around your players in March, April, May, then limited in June, it puts you at a disadvantage. This is no knock on Jimmy as a coach whatsoever. He's one of the most knowledgeable guys I've been around, and he'll do a good job wherever he goes. It was just something that I felt like we needed to do, and we did it. So, Brad, your thoughts on Pruitt moving on from Jimmy Brumbaugh, and then after you get done sharing those thoughts, your thoughts on Jeremy Pruitt taking over as the defensive line coach for the rest of the season.
What is this? I mean, you dump this news. Not only is it kind of out of left field from an outsider's perspective, but you dump this 10 minutes after the Dodgers win game 7 in the NLCS over the Braves. So very timely. You're just trying to like get this out there so you could say you did it. When you know coming up in your Monday presser, it's going to be the topic of conversation and probably trying to distract away from how bad the Kentucky game was. But while I think potentially within the department, this may have been a ploy to distract away from just how bad the Kentucky game was, I think this, from my point of view, kind of brings more of an alarming viewpoint towards Coach Pruitt. He made this hire. He made this hire in February. not only is this a one-year trial because you lose Tracy Rocker, you're bringing him in for 2 years. You pay him a significant amount for the position in comparison to other Power Five conferences. And your reason behind the change is it's not a good fit philosophically. Well, at this point in time, you should know when you're bringing in a head coach or a coach, especially at a crucial position of the defensive line, offensive line, or quarterback position, you should have a good idea of what their, you know, philosophies are and if they're going to be a good or at least a potentially good pair with you and your staff. How alarming is it to you to see Pruitt not only make this hire, be excited about it? You know, we thought there was going to be some good recruiting ties. He was known as a decent developer. And this quickly and kind of out of nowhere mid-season, we see an abrupt ending to this, you know, relationship. I'm not as much worried about Pruitt taking over the defensive line moving forward. I think he can coach any position on the defensive side of the ball, but I think it's more alarming to Jeremy Pruitt's ability to build a staff and hire guys and go through the interview process and know exactly what he's getting.
Yep, you nailed it on the head. I will say that even before this news came out, and it was out of left field, even for me with what I'm about to share is, it was still out of left field. But there was some rumblings over, I'd say about 2 weeks ago is when somebody had mentioned it to me. I didn't think anything of it because, quite frankly, Jeremy Pruitt has a track record at Tennessee as a head coach and even going back to his days as an assistant coach of not getting along with his fellow coaches, especially at Tennessee. Now that he is the man, the boss, the alpha male, he has had a problem getting along with coaches. Tyson Helton, say what you will about him as an offensive coordinator, he's no longer here because he and Pruitt did not get along.
Yeah.
Tracy Rocker, Chris Rump, they're no longer here because they did not get along with Jeremy Pruitt. Terry Fair, going back to year one, is no longer here because he did not get along with Jeremy Pruitt. And now Jimmy,
that's what I really hate.
Yeah, that one's a little more nuanced than simply those two not getting along. Mm-hmm. T. Fair didn't necessarily do the greatest of jobs if we're taking our
VFL. He was also just now getting back into coaching.
You're right.
Taking a lifestyle change with his family,
for sure.
Doing some broadcasting.
For sure.
But yeah.
I don't want to harp on that, but that one was a little bit more than simply some weird energy there. But now you look at Jimmy Brumbaugh and Jeremy Pruitt, and Jimmy Brumbaugh is no longer the coach at Tennessee or the defensive line coach at Tennessee because he and Pruitt did not get along. I know Pruitt said philosophical differences, but it wasn't philosophical differences. I'm sure that did play a role once Pruitt and Brumbaugh, or Pruitt was able to kind of see how Brumbaugh works with the defensive line in practice. I'm sure that did play a role, but the main reason he is not here is because the two simply did not get along. And this was something that I heard 2 or 3 weeks ago, but even still, it was still out of left field because in the past, over the past couple of seasons, we've heard those things. We heard about Tracy Rocker and Chris Rump and these other coaches not getting along with him in the middle of the season, beginning of the season, end of the season. And then after the season was officially over, then the coaching change was made. So that's why it was out of left field, because it did come out of nowhere, and it was on a midnight of Sunday night. So it is weird to see after a loss to Kentucky, but this is something that had been brewing for a while now. And I know the easy thing to say is, oh, well, what about the quarterback position and Chris Winkie and Will Friend and the offensive line coach? Like, yeah, that's a good conversation to have, especially Chris Winkie. But this isn't a great look for Jeremy Pruitt. You got to be able to have some staff continuity, and you can't be the reason that staff continuity is not happening. You can't be a bull in a china shop. Jeremy Pruitt has the tools to be a very good head football coach, but he continues to get in his way with situations like these. You have to learn how to manage a staff, and he has gotten better. Look at Jim Chaney. Look at T. Martin, Derek Ansley, guys like that. He is getting better, but he still has a ways to go if he wants to be a successful head coach. But, Brad, I know I can tell you got something to say after that. Your thoughts on Pruitt taking over as defensive line coach?
Well, it's not necessarily that. It was more so of now Tennessee's stuck once again paying another buyout, one of 2 years, and it's just because Pruitt couldn't play nice with somebody he hired 7 months ago.
Well, that's the other issue, too.
It's just very frustrating from that standpoint, to be honest with you.
That's the other issue. Real quick before we dive into our thoughts about Pruitt taking over as D-line coach, Pruitt did make the hire, but he needs to stop leaning on others' opinions. And it's important to take into consideration other people's opinions. Like, Brad, I consider you a good friend. You have dabbled in the real estate game. If I'm in the process of buying a house, which I am, and I have a question, you're one of the first people that I'm going to come to and ask a question about real estate or about the home buying process. But just because you offer me an opinion doesn't mean that I'm going to solely base my decision with my family off of your opinion. And that's what Jeremy Pruitt has done time and time again with the Tyson Helton. He was a recommendation and he took that recommendation and it turned out miserable. Jimmy Brumbaugh was a Derek Ansley recommendation from Derek Ansley and Brumbaugh working together at Kentucky. Brumbaugh nailed his interview and he's hired. And again, it's good to listen to people in your corner sharing their opinion, especially from people you trust, like Pruitt does with Ansley. It's good to listen to his opinion and take it into consideration, but it can't be the reason you make the hire. You have to have the gut feeling yourself, and he's got to stop doing that.
I agree. And regarding the defensive line being coached by Pruitt, I mean, if there was ever a lack of physicality, I mean, surely Coach Pruitt's going to get that fixed real quick, if I had to guess.
But do you sense an issue that would the rebuttal on Twitter and social media, and take that with a grain of salt. I realize I'm referencing social media, but I do think it is a fair concern. Are you concerned that it will take away from his head coaching responsibilities?
No, because I think during the week, he's going to make it very clear during practice, this is your job, and you better know your job on Saturday because I'm coaching you guys now, and I've got to look after the entire team. You know, he may focus a little bit more on it than he typically would on game day, but I don't think his routine is going to change very much, to be honest with you. They're going to know their jobs. They're going to know their responsibilities, or at least that's going to be his expectation during the week, final questions during walkthrough before the game, and then we're hitting the ground running. At least I think that's the way Pruitt's going to approach it. I think we'll see what happens more so after Arkansas, not necessarily after whoever we play this week.
Yeah, I actually don't think Tennessee plays this Saturday. But no, I'm not worried about it either for a couple of reasons. A, in terms of it taking away from his head coaching responsibilities, I still think he'll be able to manage all of that. At the end of the day, this is really just, in terms of practice time, it's really just an hour and a half to 2 hours out of the day. And that's time that he would ordinarily spend, you know, bouncing from position to position on the practice field anyways. So he's not really being a head coach and doing head coach things during practice to begin with. He's just bouncing from position to position, which, yes, technically is a head coach requirement, I guess, or something a head coach does. But it's not a detriment to not do that is, I guess, what I'm getting at. And I guess it may take some time away during the day because he'll have to orchestrate position meetings now. But still, even when everybody is in position meetings, he's probably bouncing around as well. So I don't think it'll truly hamper his ability or take away from his ability to be a head coach on Saturdays because he also has the help of Derek Ansley. And that's the other factor that makes me feel okay with this move. I actually like the move, to be quite honest. Obviously, you want a defensive line coach, but given the circumstances, I don't think that you can find anybody better than Jeremy Pruitt to be a defensive line coach in this type of scenario. At the end of the day, say what you will about Pruitt.
I know a guy, and he writes in all caps.
No. I know a guy, and he just finished coaching middle school football in Knoxville. But at the end of the day, say what you will about Jeremy Pruitt, he's still a great X's and O's football coach, and that's what he'll be doing during practice. So I have confidence that the defensive line will take a step forward, but also he doesn't need to spend – he doesn't have to spend time on the offensive side of the ball. You have Jim Chaney. Say what you will about Chris Winkie and Will Friend, but that's an area – where Jim Chaney can direct, Jim Chaney can oversee the quarterbacks, the offensive line, like he always does in practice. And you also have T. Martin, who is in charge of the passing game, or as the passing game coordinator. So you have T. Martin, you have Jim Chaney on that side of the ball. And then defensively, Derek Ansley can also step up and kind of oversee the defense overall as well. So to be honest with you, obviously you don't want to have to make the move, but I kind of like the thought of Jeremy Pruitt coaching up the defensive line. I think you'll see an increase in physicality and production from the defensive line moving forward.
I hope so. They definitely need it. Take some pressure off of Henry T and the second level of that defense. Flip it over to the other side of the ball. What, if anything, changes at practice with the quarterback position?
I don't think anything changes just because of how they already conduct practice. And that's that. At least according to Pruitt, we're not there to see, and we're always kicked out of practice before we get to see the
anything
reps
good.
Divvied up anyways. So, but Pruitt has always said that they divvy up the reps evenly, that the third string and fourth string guy gets the same amount of reps as the first string guy. Obviously, that is different when they go to 11 on 11, and you don't want your 14 quarterback working with the first team offense against the first team defense as much as your first team quarterback, especially during the season. So that will change. And I think when it does get to that point in practice, then reps truly do need to be even between all four quarterbacks. I think all four need to get a legitimate shot at winning the job. JG may not turn it over in practice, and the other quarterbacks may turn it over in practice all the time, but what does it matter if JG goes into the game and turns it over all the time as well? I mean, what good does not turning it over in practice become at that point when he's just doing what the other guys do in practice anyway? So prepare Harrison Bailey, prepare Brian Maurer, prepare JT Schrout, and continue to work JG as well, because the sense behind the scenes is that if Tennessee football is going to get this turned around, it's going to be because of JG is being productive. He gives Tennessee the best chance of winning, as painful as that is to say. So I don't change anything at practice, Brad, except for when you do get to 11 on 11, you do need to make sure that everybody's getting a fair crack at potentially being the quarterback on game day.
I want to see Brian Maurer. I know there's a lot of things in the air. I know it's attitude, things off the field. Is he going to transfer? He talks about it, his attitude. But I still have that in my mind, the life that he brought to the offense last year when they really needed it. Didn't make all of the correct throws, made some mistakes, threw some interceptions. But the offense was energized. And I just want to see some type of energy with this offense again. We got such a good offensive line, and you hate to see it go to waste just because of lack of confidence in the guy getting the snap. So regardless of who it is, and regardless if he's going to be in a Tennessee uniform next year, throw somebody in there that's going to, you know, put a kick into the rear of this Tennessee offense, because they need something.
He energized the offense until he went out and threw two first half interceptions against Mississippi State. And then that changed real quick. So,
and then it was JG that saved the day, and then saved the day for the next few games. I get it. But we need something.
Nothing about Tennessee's quarterback situation the last 2 years makes sense whatsoever, which, again, I don't blame the in-season, in-game quarterback decisions that Pruitt, Chaney, and Winkie are making. I blame the offseason plan for the quarterback position each of the last two seasons. We all know that Jarrett Garantano is not good enough to get the job done on a consistent basis, and somebody else should have been brought in. You brought in Keller Christ year one. Keller Christ was not a great option whatsoever. The second year you couldn't really find anybody. Gardner Minshew did have some interest, but Tennessee didn't have any. Tennessee did not feel comfortable bringing him in for whatever reason. And then this past season, they did not like Derek King for whatever reason, and they did not feel like risking the commitment of Ty Simpson was worth bringing in JT Daniels. So the JT Daniels one definitely
that one makes sense.
That one makes sense, but
yeah.
And I can get not viewing Derek King as a perfect quarterback prospect or a guy that's like just picture perfect answer. I don't think he is a 1,000% solution. Just look at how he played against Clemson recently. But you can't convince me that he's not better than Jarrett Garantano. You just simply cannot do it.
Agreed. And he'd be a great transition to Caden Salter and then to Simpson. I mean,
correct.
I could definitely see it, and it's a similar offensive scheme.
Yep. And no matter how the rest of the season plays out at the quarterback position, if Jarrett Garantano lights the world on fire and decides to come back for a seventh year, which I don't think is going to happen, but it's a possibility, not a great one, but it is a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if come back next year. To bring in a graduate transfer this offseason. You have to do it. It will be a failure if you don't bring in a graduate transfer this offseason. You have to have somebody that can bridge the gap until Harrison Bailey is ready, until Caden Salter or Ty Simpson, until one of those three guys are ready. You have to have somebody that can bridge the gap. I think it's safe to say that JT Stroud is not the answer. I think it is safe to assume that Brian Maurer will not be here next year. Yes, he came out and said that he wouldn't quit on his team midseason, but by saying that, he also admitted that he's transferring at the end of the season. So I think it's safe to assume that he will no longer be here. And that leaves you with Harrison Bailey. So until Harrison Bailey is ready, until Caden Salter is ready, potentially Ty Simpson, if he commits, then you have to have a graduate transfer come in, whether it be a one-year grad transfer or a two-year guy, come in and bridge the gap, or this offseason, a good chunk of it will be a failure.
And I know the list will change, but currently looking at the potential grad transfers for next season, it's not a great list. Not a lot of intriguing names. I mean, if you want to go just from celebrity star status, you got Drew Bledsoe's son in there. But, I mean, that kid was a two-star coming out of high school, and he couldn't even get on the field at Washington State. There's not a lot of high-profile names, you know, celebrity status or not, that I think Tennessee would be locked into right now, but that list will change. And you may know something that I don't, but when it comes to names that jump off the page, I don't think Tennessee's really eyeing anybody right now as it currently stands.
Only because people are not available. I think as they come available, and you said this, but the list will change. People will become available. Last year, it was Derek King, JT Daniels. The year prior, it was Jalen Hurts. The year before that, it was Gardner Minshew. Although Gardner Minshew wasn't a household name, I'm sure if we went back and looked at that year, there was a prominent graduate transfer. Justin Fields transferred that year. So there's always somebody, at least one guy, a prominent quarterback that will transfer. Tennessee needs to be ready to pounce on that guy. I don't care if you have to hook him up with the finest girl in Knoxville, the finest girl in Tennessee. I don't care what type of bag you have to drop off to him. I'm joking. But you have to do whatever it takes to get him here is my point. You have to pull out all the stops to get whatever star quarterback, whatever stud quarterback leaves his current home. You have to be ready to pounce on him. You have to pull out all the stops. But, Brad, before we get out of here, I know we've talked about the quarterback position, and rightfully so, because the quarterback position right now is holding Tennessee back. I do want to go over some of these comments that Jeremy Pruitt made on Monday during his press conference, because I'll let you tell me how you feel after I read you some of these quotes. But to me, it seems like Jarrett Garantano is going to be the first quarterback to trot out against the team who will not be named this Saturday. Pruitt was asked directly if Jarrett Garantano is still your quarterback, and Pruitt said, quote, "Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, Jarrett didn't play his best game the other night. There's some other guys that didn't play their best game too. He's going to have to go out there and earn it in practice like everybody else. Am I wanting to put Jarrett Garantano on the shelf? No, absolutely not. I think the guy has a lot of really good qualities about him. He has helped us win a lot of football games. Did he make a few mistakes on Saturday? Sure he did. I think everybody on our football team and in our organization all could have done better, starting with me. This isn't about one person. This is about everybody in our program. I think everybody within our program understands that." I mentioned this quote earlier as well on if the mistakes that we're seeing from Jarrett Garantano in practice, or if the mistakes that we're seeing in the game from Jarrett Garantano, are they seeing those same mistakes in practice? And Pruitt said, "Jarrett has thrown very few interceptions in practice all fall camp. He has done a really nice job taking care of the football. It is why he has been our starting quarterback. He has been doing a nice job taking care of the football. He has got to eliminate those mistakes. We have to do a better job up front collectively as a group offensively, being more efficient in third downs and protecting the quarterback, whoever the quarterback is." And he said that he would not know right now when asked if Tennessee could play two quarterbacks against Alabama. So, Brad, what stood out to me from those two quotes real quick before I toss it to you? He just told you why Jarrett is playing. Jarrett does not turn the football over in practice. The other quarterbacks do. I mean, it's really as simple as that. And I mentioned this earlier. Why not give another quarterback a chance when Jarrett goes in and does turn the football over in a game? That kind of eliminates what he is doing in practice. So maybe the quarterbacks who are turning it over in practice, maybe they'll pull a JG and do the reverse and not turn it over in a game, though JT Stroud did not help make that case on Saturday when he threw in the triple coverage on the very first possession he was in. And then the other thing, and this is where I come up with the belief that you'll see him start against Alabama or the team who shall not be named on Saturday, is, am I wanting to put Jarrett Garantano on the shelf? No, absolutely not. I think the guy has a lot of really good qualities about him. That does not sound like somebody who will be benched on Saturday. And again, it goes back to the coaching staff believing that Jarrett is the best option. Again, behind the scenes, people are saying, multiple people are saying, that if Tennessee is going to get this turned around this season, it's not going to be with another quarterback. It's going to be because JG protects the football and plays like he did against South Carolina and Missouri. If Tennessee is going to turn this around, it's going to be with JG at the helm, because he corrected his mistakes. And again, I don't necessarily blame Pruitt for the in-season quarterback decisions, but once again, this is a failure from the offseason of not addressing the quarterback position.
And that's what he's still trying to keep under wraps. I mean, it's not necessarily the best-kept secret in Knoxville, but as long as JG is starting, it's an out for Coach Pruitt. And that's why you hear the wording in his comments that you just read. Do I want to put JG on the shelf? No, I don't. Because then it raises the questions and how alarmingly bad or, you know, worse off we would be with any quarterback on the roster other than JG. The potential's there. Maybe their ceilings are higher, but they are not going to perform at a higher level than JG is right now. And so then it goes from, if he makes the change, it goes from a JG problem to the fan base to a Pruitt problem to the fan base. And that's what he wants to avoid. And so I understand the wording. It probably irked a lot of people, maybe the loud minority on social media, but it's to be expected. I mean, regardless if you want to believe it or not, as much as it sucks, like taking cough medicine as a kid, it's the best chance to win. And we may not even have a chance to win on Saturday.
They don't.
But do you want to go out there and ruin the confidence of Harrison Bailey? Do you want to go out there and put JT Shroud in his, what, first, second start, if he's ever had one?
He started against South Carolina last year.
So second career start against the Crimson Tide and coming off of a interception in his lone possession of this season and just ruin his confidence in his future as a collegiate quarterback. I mean, it just doesn't bode well in any situation regarding a backup quarterback. Let's get through this week with JG. Then you've got a bye week before Arkansas. If it's that evident that we need to make a change, which I think it is, but at what point this coaching staff has to decide, all right, we're going to start playing for the future, or do we stick with JG and we're going to try to win as many games as we can this year just to save face with the win-loss record? Future or win-loss record? They're going to have to decide that in the next few weeks.
Yeah, and ultimately the win-loss record affects the future. So if I were Tennessee, I would focus on the win-loss record. And as was the case last year following the Florida debacle, JG gives you the best chance to win still because you have the same group of quarterbacks. I would not personally trot JT Shrout out there over JG if they were going to bench JG. I would give Brian Maurer a shot. But again, I don't think he's healthy enough with his hamstring issue, so I don't think that's an option. I'm not totally against Harrison Bailey starting against team who should not be named this Saturday.
I am.
I would not do it. I would still just put JG in and let him take the beating and pray to our Heavenly Father that he pulls a miracle or pulls a hat out of his – or pulls a rabbit out of his head, as Jason Witten once said. But I don't know. It's just a really tough situation to be in.
When you look back at Pruitt's comments, well, Jared doesn't turn the ball over in practice. You know, he's maybe thrown just a couple interceptions. What does that tell you about our secondary, who hasn't been forcing that many turnovers so far this season? But also, Jared probably hasn't been going up against the full set of ones because of the lingering injuries that Bryce Thompson's gone through earlier in the year with the ankle. And then also with Sean Schamberger just now getting back into the fold. I mean, is he really facing the best competition in practice? If so, when do we start looking at the defensive backs, if that's the reason why JG is still in the game? I understand Shroud and the other quarterbacks are still, you know, having some interceptions, some bad decisions in practice, but it's a different ball game when it comes out there with JG and you're playing against the number ones for each opposition on Saturday. So I don't know. There's a lot of questions, Ben. And to be honest with you, it's getting to a frustrating level, especially not only just losing to Kentucky, but getting absolutely embarrassed.
Getting to a frustration level. I'm already there.
I mean,
somebody bring me some Tylenol and a bottle of Jack.
It's getting to a level where I want to just walk around talking in all caps, and it's just you got those wide eyes on your face.
Brady Hoke.
No, I mean, it's not necessarily the Brady Hoke. It's just like you're frustrated, so you're talking louder. You got the angry eyes. Everybody thinks you're just upset at the world, but they don't understand why. It's getting to that point with me just because there's so many things that are making me lose hair.
You look like you're on drugs when you make that face, so I would encourage
you. The wide eyes?
Yes, I would encourage you not to do that again. You look like you're on drugs, so I would encourage you not
Let's not do that. Yeah.
It's okay. I'm in the losing my hair club as well, and I'm further along than you are. And as I always say, it's solely Tennessee's fault. If Tennessee had a good football program, I would still have a head full of hair. I completely blame the Vols. Yeah, well, it dates back further than Butch Jones, unfortunately.
It's Butch Jones for me. That's when it started.
Yeah, it started with Dooley for me. That 2012 defense took years off my life. That's really what started me losing my hair, is that 2012 defense.
I tell you what, those were some bad teams, but every single press conference, I was laughing, I was giggling, because Dooley was just such a goofball. So like it was a different weird kind of fandom, but it's just like, all right, it was like our version of Mike Leach. You just don't know what he's going to say.
And thankfully he's not our football coach anymore, but
very true.
Brad, I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. We will reconvene on Thursday and Friday. One of those 2 days we'll figure out as the week goes on what time works best to reconvene, and we will revisit our feelings towards the quarterback position at that time, see if our feelings have changed on Thursday or Friday compared to Monday or 48 hours after Tennessee's loss to Kentucky. But again, we will be back later this week. For Brad Matthews, I am Ben McKee. We will talk to you all next time.